Media manager.
Are you really maximizing your minutes?
Motivator.
Never, never, ever quit.
Mentor.
You gotta pay it forward.
This.
I punch failure in the face.
Is the Go Get It podcast.
Now that you know that, go get it.
Hey, this is Sharon Feingold, and you can hear me at SharonFeingold.com. But now, you're listening to the man that taught Tom Cruise how to say, show me the money, Corey Disson.
Sharon, my dear, you had me at hello. And I was just talking about that whole show me the money thing with Tom at our last Scientology retreat. Now, let's not forget to thank the man who always shows us the money, along with his huge deep pipes, our show announcer, Mr. Mark Peoples at markpeoples.com. This is the Go Get It podcast, where we try to take a quick, fresh look at the topics, influencers, and issues that affect the voiceover world, but we're known to stray off course and tickle anything else that might be of interest, especially if it helps motivate you to go get it. The Go Get It podcast is sponsored by George the Tech. Recording studios support design and technical training anywhere, provided remotely by George Whittam at georgethetech.com. And now, let me get into my movie guy voice here. Now playing on a podcast near you. That voice you have heard on countless movie trailers, network promos, and currently as the voice of hundreds of TV and radio spots for Monster Jam, the voice talent who is rated PDG for pretty damn good, my main man, Justin Pede.
Oh, man. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Pleasure to be here with you, man. I don't know what intro is better, man. That's thanks for the lead, man.
There you go, man. I set you up for success right there. Well, welcome to the Go Get It podcast, my friend.
Yeah, man.
It is awesome. It is awesome having you here. And, I mean, hell, let's dive right in here because I got all sorts of cool questions I want to ask you about your career. I mean, you know, first, what is fascinating to me is that, okay, yes, you are an established voiceover announcer, 15-year career in voiceovers, you know, repped by Jason Mark's talent. You know, you've done movie trailers, network promos, in-show narrations. You're all over the place. But you got your start in the business fairly quickly and fairly, I would say, you're like a unicorn in that you went to UNC, your Tar Heel, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
And you went right from wearing, you know, that Tar Heel, North Carolina blue, then you're out in Beverly Hills working in a huge market. How did that happen?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, it was, I grew up a film kid wanting to do something in film, dive into it one way or another. Was one of those kids who made movies with a, you know, the first camera he'd get his hands on with his buddies. And we did that all through high school. I went to UNC when we still had a pretty strong film program there. It's not quite the same anymore, but, very good in other ways. And I was it, man. I had this thing. I was going to stick my nose in one way or another. And I literally packed up my car, stopped off at my parents' house and drove out to LA. Now I had designs on doing that, even in college, because I did an internship out there, which this is a funny story, because initially I thought I was a production guy, right? I was behind the camera. I was a director, a writer and an actor. So that's kind of, you know, student films are the funniest because your actors half the times never show up. So then you end up being the actor in your own student film.
You're the chief cook and bottle washer.
Right. So through a couple of avenues through the school and the program, I ended up with some names, and I had some family friends who had some establishment, but pretty loose. So I kind of just threw out a bunch of feelers like, hey, you know, young kid from North Carolina, willing to kind of come out, work for free, you know, bust his tail and do whatever he needs to do. And I got a hit on a production. And they were like, yeah, it sounds great. Come on out. You can be a PA. And it's literally 2 weeks before I'm going out. And I call the person who's been my contact, and she's like, oh, we forgot to call you. Production shut down. Producers in rehab.
Man.
Yeah. So they're like, we think we're coming back, but we're not sure. And everybody's on hiatus right now. And I'm like, okay, well, it was one of those things where my brother had moved out, you know, a little bit before, was starting to get his feet wet in California. In he does movie posters, and so he was starting in that world. He was a design guy, but not fully established in that yet, but still it was going to be where I was going to stay, and I was going to, you know, go do my thing, and he was doing his. And so, you know, I was like, well, I don't have the gig, but I might as well go out, you know, because I got everything else planned, right? So I went out, and I'm literally sending out a, you know, a resume that says the header was "will work for free." Yeah, and I sent it to everybody I could find in the LA 411, and then I was just picking out names, you know, from what seemed cool, right? And at that point, my focus was like getting into a production. The first people who said yes was Roger Corman, of obviously immense fame in the independent world that has launched a million careers. So I always kind of make the joke that he launched mine, even though it really had nothing to do with what I ended up doing.
And you didn't have to take your shirt later. Off.
Yeah, right. And so it was funny. That summer, his assistant was like, yeah, come on over. So I would go to their place and I would work for them. And so I did. That was part of the summer. And then the other job that I ended up getting was, again, kind of through a random kind of name pull. You know, my brother's friend is like, hey, are you interested in movie trailers? And I'm like, yeah, I'm interested in movie trailers, man. It's like, you know, it's like the best part of the movie, right? And so he's like, well, I used to work for this guy who's a legend in Hollywood, Anthony Goldschmidt. He's recently deceased, but he was just one of the original OG godfathers of the business, right? He's a guy that when they would run credits for the films that he had designed posters for, done the trailers, his name is in the credits. Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, this was just this guy had worked for him years earlier, and he's like, hey, you know, you interested in that? And I'm like, that sounds great, man. Like, sure. So he gives me his name. I fax over my, you know, my goofy cover letter, "will work for free." Well, it turns out the guy, Anthony, who runs the dub room, needed a helper for the summer. So it never made it to the OG, but it made it to a guy who needed somebody to come in. So, I mean, total. Yeah, total. And he's like, you know how to work a 3/4 machine? I'm like, you betcha. You know, so I show up there. I'm running tapes around. I'm dubbing tapes. I'm working, you know, I'm working on work prints, you know, for the trailers, and getting to do a little bit of kind of, you know, avid tech work and stuff like that. Just a little bit of everything I'd learned while I was in film school. And my mom always laughs because I called her and I was like, I'm not coming home. She's like, what? I'm like, this is a great gig. I'm not coming home. She's like, come on back. Yeah. She's like, come on back. I'm like, all right, okay, I'll come on back. And so I went back. I finished my last year of school, and I packed up the car and I moved back out. And at that point, I wasn't sure. I was still kind of hustling that production thing.
Yep.
You know, I had a camera that I was trying to kind of be a, you know, I bought one of the early DV cams, Sony DV cams, and I was trying to kind of be a independent, you know, videographer, filmmaker, whatever I could. But, you know, after a couple of months, I wasn't getting a whole lot of work. I'd made these great ties with the folks over at Intralink, and I call up and they're like, yeah, come on back. We loved you. So I went over there, just kind of picked up where I left off the summer before. And, you know, I'm blown away when I walk into this place because it's like they're working on, you know, Batman and Apollo 13. And it's like, you know, blockbuster movies. Right. And you're like, wow, this is amazing. I'll do anything to keep doing this. Right. You know, and again, great people working there. I mean, some of my, you know, dearest mentors, you know, who taught me so much in a variety of different ways, you know. Man, I put my nose to the grindstone over there. I tried to learn everything I could. You know, it's funny. I did actually do my first few voiceover reads there. We had a guy who was our in-house guy, because at that point, Don LaFontaine was the man. And he would come in, you know, a couple times a day to read on stuff that we had going on. And, you know, I saw how the process was working. We had our little booth. They taught me how to work the tech on running our studio. And, you know, I remember one day the guy who usually did the temp was doing something else. He was unavailable or whatever. And they're like, well, hey, man, like, you want to give this a try? You've been working up here in the booth. I'm like, yeah, I'll read that. And, you know, the guy who was cutting the spot was like, that's not bad, man. That's pretty good. I'm like, you know, I've been, I've been hanging around. I've been acting. I've been doing this stuff. So it was like, that was my first little thing. I didn't really think about it fully at that point because I was just so engulfed in trying to learn everything I could. You know, that's what I always tell people when they're trying to get into that kind of business in general. Man, if somebody asks you if you know how to do something, as long as you know a little bit, say yes, and then kind of just roll with it, man, and pick up that skill. You know, it's always a number of times throughout the course of, you know, my post-production career, the next advancement for me would always be because another person was sick or they didn't want to work the weekend or they had to go home because it was too late. And I'm like, I'll stay, you know, I'll sleep on the couch.
There you go.
You know,
so you parlayed this due paying experience and picking up all these, you know, learning how to do all these different tasks, all these different facets of the film industry. And you parlayed that to get to Universal and Open Road.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, just through the course of eventually I was kind of, the lead assistant and doing, some editing there at Intralink. I'd gotten my first couple of finishes as an editor, but I was still involved in the nuts and bolts of our post-production. I could kind of handle some of the stuff that some of the other guys did. I wasn't doing it all the time, but if I needed to be involved in the audio or some of the film finishing, I could do that as well. And so one of the guys there who had a lead with somebody he used to work with over at Universal said, hey, you're a hustler. You're the kind of guy they'd be interested in over there. And so, he gave me a name. I contacted who would be my boss over there for a number of years, Dan Wolf, who was, again, you know, a great mentor for me over there. And he said, yeah, you know, we've got this job. He's like, it's probably not the perfect fit for you right now. And he's like, but we might have another one opening up in a couple months. I said, all right, man, you know, let's just keep in touch. And so then I ended up going over there to kind of, again, be kind of a jack of all trades, you know. When I went over there, I said, hey, this is great. But I said, I want to do more creative as well. And he's like, that's fine. He's like, I'll get you set up. You can handle this stuff. And we're going to, you know, as appropriate and as, you know, as available, we'll feed you some stuff. And so I did. And one thing led to another. I got some pretty cool projects under my belt. And at the same time, I was doing a lot of kind of the creative work. I would find myself doing all these kooky ADRs for the trailer and TV spot work. And then at the same time, narrating my stuff. And the volume became so big because the department was really, you know, hustle and bustle at that point. People started hearing my stuff and they'd go, well, who did that? You know? And I'd be like, well, that was me. And they'd be like, oh man, well, come read mine. You know, I said, okay, I'll come read yours. And then they put me on a couple things that ended up on air. And I remember by the time I left there, I could barely get my work done because everybody would be like, hey, what are you doing, man? I need you to come read a line. Hey, what are you doing, man? I got two more scripts for you. Hey, can you come down here and do this?
So you really just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, man. It was just, again, I think for me, it was just trying all those different things led me to one where I was right in the mix of this thing, you know. And I'll never forget, I had one of my closest buddies over the course of my whole career and to this day, who's a really talented writer-producer, Stephen Roberts, he walked down the hall one day and he goes, man, we just replaced you on that spot. And he's like, and you were better. And I was like, wow, okay, man. He's like, you need to do this. You know, he's like, nothing against the guy we just put on because he's great too. But he's like, I need you out there on the air with this stuff.
So walk me through something here. So you're starting to pick up all these sort of happenstance voiceover gigs because you're the guy who happens to be in the building. Now folks are starting to assign you voiceover jobs to do. But put yourself in the shoes of a lot of our voiceover comrades that are out there right now that maybe they're working at an ad agency or they're working for a video production company or who knows, maybe they're, you know, day jobbing it, selling copy machines, whatever it is, but they're chasing their dream to be a voiceover artist and they're approaching their own little tipping point where they're doing enough work in the evening or early morning or on their lunch break where they got to make that decision of, hey man, do I take that leap of faith? Am I ready to do that full time? Take us through your story of where, how you got to that point and then what took you over the threshold to do it full time.
Yeah. Well, so for me, Universal was great. It was an amazing place. There was a lot of cool stuff going on at that point in time. But being inside of an exclusive studio, it wasn't like I could work for other places in the voiceover arena. I could do what I was doing there editorially. If they happened to like something I was doing and it went on air, that was good. But I couldn't really go and audition for, you know, a movie at another studio or really try to put myself into, hey, let me get into promos and let me do this, because it just that was not within the, you know, what would be looked at as cool, right? And so in that period, I was also kind of looking to see what the next phase for me would be in regards to the editorial thing. And I had been in contact with some other people who were opening a new shop. And Open Road opened at that time. Jeff Smith and I had been in contact over the course of the last few years through common friends. And he's like, hey, I'm going to open a new place. I'm like, well, that sounds exciting. And I knew some of the guys he was bringing on board. And at the same time, I wanted to see how you could take something, you know, from the start and kind of grow in that regard. Maybe that would be something, you know, that would be beneficial or interesting. Because, again, I was always trying to see, you know, more and learn more through, you know, through that angle of business. And at the same time, I was like, hey, and that'll give me the opportunity to kind of be able to stretch my wings a little further there. Right. Because same thing, you know, it's great to do, you know, a little bit here and there, but until you really got to get in there and start swimming and swimming and swimming, you know, you don't know whether or not you're going to stay afloat. Right. So I was like, okay, let me make this leap. I went over, and part of what we talked about, I was like, hey, I want to put a booth in here while, you know, I'll set up the equipment and do it so I can, you know, I can spend, just like you're saying, I can spend my lunch break. I can stay a little bit after hours. I can come in early if I need to do some demos or whatever. And so that kind of really started me to, okay, I'm going to take this and I'm going to push a little further. I'm going to invest a little time and money into really going, okay, let's see if I can make some more out of that. Then over the course of time, it became, I got a demo out, got representation, and I started getting some traction with some clients that were more than just one-offs. It was like, okay, I had a couple of clients where it was like, I'm kind of trying to buzz over there at lunch and whatever. And I got to the point where I was uncertain whether or not I could truly make it work, whether it would outweigh, you know, the steady paycheck job that I had, but I was never going to find out unless I just said, let's go for it. Right. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go for it. I put an edit bay in my house. I set myself up with a little home studio and said, okay, I can kind of try to juggle both, but I'll be doing it kind of on my own time and my own terms. So I'm not feeling like I'm neglecting, you know, a client on one side or the other because, you know, I'm too busy with one or the other, you know. And that was kind of, it was definitely a scary moment. There's no question.
Wow. That is unbelievable. I mean, and I guess it helped that you were in Hollywood, Burbank, wherever. I mean, that you were a stone's throw from a lot of people.
That was it. And in that time, everybody, you were still driving around, you know. It was like, and I always tell the joke, had it with a bunch of people who know that part of this time was like, it was like you were late for a job interview five times a day, right? Cause you're battling LA traffic,
yeah.
To the next audition or the next gig. And yeah, you know, I the thing was, hey, let me try this if it's going to work. And I had somebody call me like, hey, we want you to come do a freelance edit job. I'm like, well, man, I actually just booked an in-show for like a, you know, like kind of reality thing. And I'm like, man, I got 4 hours, you know, I got 4 hours back to back on Tuesday. I can't start an editorial job, you know, like, so, you know, it just kind of, I had been practicing and like really trying to expand what I was capable of before I made that jump. Because to me, kind of what you're saying, you know, about what, you know, how to prepare or what can make you push you over that edge is, you know, I was doing what I had been in that genre of, you know, doing these trailers and doing, you know, whether it was comedy or, you know, or action or whatever. But that was the thing I was doing on a day-to-day basis. But I was like, that I need to make sure that I can do some other things if I'm going to go do this and I'm going to do it all the time, you know. And so I would practice anything that I could see that I thought was of interest and that I thought was in my genre. I just it was on TV. It was the era of TiVo had just come out, you know, which was brilliant for this. You know, now it's like we all have a DVR or you can stream and fast forward and whatever. But it was perfect because I would be like, oh, what was that? And I'd rewind and I'd be like, oh, that was a cool spot. Or like, you know, that was a commercial that I think, you know, if I'm auditioning something like that, I should be able to be in that genre. And just
– You just practiced at home. Just
practice at home. Yeah.
Which leads me to another question. So, well, I'm gonna rewind here for a moment. The skills that you picked up in the video production world and the film production world, how did those translate to your success in the voiceover world?
Sure. Yeah. And I will say, I do think that was something that helped me. Because again, people always say, you know, did you take a lot of classes? And I dabbled, but by the time I was doing this, people were like, man, like just keep doing what you're doing, because what you're doing is really good. And I think for me it was a combo of being that aspiring actor guy back in the day, right? Being able to kind of take those risks and kind of being unfettered, because 9 times out of 10 when I was doing that, it was in my own goofy stuff, right? And then learning from behind the keyboard, I was right at the cusp of, you know, nonlinear. I can tinker with the 3/4-inch machines and the moviolas, but that was right in the beginning of the nonlinear thing for me. So it was like I would certainly know where I wanted breaks. I would know where I wanted inflection, and I would know, you know, hey, I need speed. I always laugh because when everybody tells me, hey, slow down, you can take this a little slower, I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? We've got time here. So for me, it was, you know, a lot about thinking about that structure, not necessarily about looking at the page, which I know that's very important too. But looking at it and making interpretations, because, you know, some people will give you a script exactly how they want it broken, and then somebody might give it to you and it might be written by one guy, but the guy who's editing it really has a totally different vision for what he's doing. So for me, it was always looking at where those words make sense. You know, and not trying to push too hard, because people, if they want something, that's what direction's for. That's what that creative part of what they're doing. Give an interpretation, but don't go, you know, don't try to invent the wheel for them. Just give them, you know, solid material, you know, read cleanly, you know, and with, you know, thoughtful ideas to, yeah, well, in thoughtful ideas as to how it's going to end up in the cut and then some point on screen and somewhere else. Because other than that, it's like you're reading a book to your kid at night, and that's not the same thing as to what, you know, is what we're doing, you know?
And you sat in the editor's chair, so you could sympathize with what they're up against putting these projects together.
No question. I'll still to this day, if I'm, you know, and you know, the world has gotten so fast over the course of time, we're not live on the mic with people as much as we used to. But if I'm talking with somebody who I know is going to be the one sitting behind the keyboard working on the material, I'll be like, you know, what's your method? What's your favorite method for how you edit this? Do you want me to read the same phrase 5 times in a row so you can listen to it 1, 2, 3 and put in the best one you want? Or you want it all in one big chunk because you like the synergy of listening to the whole thing in one long piece, you know? That's not as easy to do these days, because a lot of times the material is just coming across your computer and you got to jam it back, you know, with kind of whatever direction that you have on the page. But to me, I always think that way, because to me, that's always like, and I know you and I've had this conversation. It's like, I know when I'm done, whether it's, you know, a session I'm doing at 10 o'clock in the morning or at noon or at midnight, that once it leaves my hands, It's got to go through hell and back before the people who get it on air are done with it. So anything that you can do, in my opinion, to help that process is always a benefit, right? Even to how you prepare your files and get them up, you know? Like, I don't leave a bunch of nonsense at the beginning of my recordings. I trim it down to where we are. Say, hey, Justin reading on this, take one, let's roll, you know? So it's like, just the simplicity of, I'll never be able to let that go, because that's where I came from with this, you know?
I gotcha. So it's obvious your approach and your work ethic and your experience, you know, starting from college through your adventures at different Hollywood studios has paid you huge dividends. You've worked for a who's who of television networks. I mean, everything from, you know, the NFL Network, History Channel, Meet the Press. I think I even heard you doing like a Bohemian Rhapsody trailer. I mean, you are all over the place. And, you know, there are so many talent that are striving to get to that level, you know, of success and notoriety and working with these prestigious accounts. You know, for that talent right now, who I'm very fond of, and I have lots of friends and connections and colleagues that fit that profile, for that woman or man that is sitting and listening to this podcast right now, what can you tell them? How could you maybe pay it forward to them to give them a hint of, hey, these are things you can do in your everyday game that could help you ascend? What do you think?
Yeah, well, we touched on the one, you know, and I think that's an interesting one, because I remember for me when I, again, the amazing advent of TiVo, right? Coupled with the idea of being able to practice material that you see on, and, you know, you can go on YouTube now and you can Google any trailer, any spot and get it. And so you can kind of put yourself in what genre you feel comfortable with and get practice with those materials that obviously have made, you know, live on TV or in theaters or whatever. But to me, I always tell people, you can have the best voice in the world. I mean, I people always laugh at me, because like, when you speak, you don't sound like the guy, you know, who did this, or, you know, because it's like, I've done some really heavy, you know, trailers, and then I've done some scientific documentaries, and then I've done goofy stuff all over, you know. So it's like, it's just a matter of, you know, making those changes and tweaks in your voice. But the most important thing I say is you have to take the page, or in this day, for me, it's an iPad. I read off of an iPad, and you have to be able to read those words off of it. Like, it sounds so simple, but it goes back to the basics. Nobody wanted to stand up in the front of class and read out of the book when the teacher called their name, right? But if you can't do it, right, if you can't read them and have them come out naturally and flow, it's impossible. Your buttery voice or your amazing comedic, you know, tenor doesn't do any good. You know, it's like, you have to be able to, you know, and for some things it's more simple, right? A 3-line promo or something like that. It's like, that's not rocket science to make those words jump off the page, because they're only, you know, 4 words in the phrase. But to pick up a 40-page documentary that's an hour long, and to read, you know, something about, you know, a scientific discovery or a medical, you know, catastrophe, or, you know, the inner workings of a, you know, detective going behind the scenes in a you know, undercover operation, like, that's not easy, you know. And it's like, it just takes practice. To me, it's just like, you just have to practice. The more you read, the more you can read things that are in your comfort zone, then you can spread your wings into things you're like, well, you know, I didn't really think I could do things like that, but let me give that a try too, because now I'm comfortable with the process, right?
So you mix in, you know, practice, and then, you know, without saying this directly, there's been a common theme throughout this entire conversation that I beat all the time, which is work your ass off.
No question. I mean, it's what opportunities do you have? And you know, again, like you said, if you got people always say, I've had friends, you know, hey, I got a friend, he's interested. And I'm going, okay, well, you know, it's amazing what the internet's done now, which is great, because it's like, you know, before it was like, hey, man, like, you know, LA, New York, Chicago, maybe, you know, some markets down in Florida and wherever, you didn't have a lot of opportunity to get in front of people, right? Give them your reads, you know, but I still always say, you still have to market yourself by trying to meet the people you're going to work with. So getting involved with people who, you know, hey man, like, I'm not sure if this thing's going to go anywhere, or like, it's something that's, you know, for an internal piece in our thing, and we're not, got to go give it a try. You got to go give it a try, because then you're going to work with the person who, the next one that comes down the line, you know, it might be for a client and they're interested in hearing a guy like you or a girl like you or whatever. And that guy's going to remember, man, that guy did, you know, that guy, yeah, he sounded good on that. And, you know, he was cool. He came in, or he got it back to me real quick. It's a lot about, you know, you have to be fast these days. You know, you have to be fast. Every advent in post-production has made things faster and easier to transfer. And so that goes right over to the world of what we do. You know, it's like, there's no more, let's wait till that tape gets delivered over to that place, and then that tape goes to this place. And so, you know, to me, it's you seize the opportunities, make yourself available. I mean, the hours are when's the phone ring? I mean, that's the hours, right? I mean, you know, you work with all kinds of guys. There's guys in Australia who wake up in the middle of the night to read stuff. You know, I've worked for people in the UK, Singapore, and, you know, all around the world. And you just adjust your hours, you know. And to me, it is a 24-hour business. It is a 24-hour, you know, world in what we're doing now. And with that comes opportunity, you know. And you just you know, you have to roll with the flow, you know, and you know, and be thankful for it. You know, that's the thing. Like, I always say, this is a great job. I love being able to do different things each day, right? It's like one day it's something about a wedding cake that's, you know, made like a shark. And then the next day it's about, you know, hidden tunnels, you know, in Germany or whatever it is. You know, it's like it's amazing and it's cool. But on top of that, like I said before, you know that there's a lot more that goes through this process. So you got to be as efficient, you got to be on your game so that you're helping everybody else down the line, right?
Well, I can tell you, I can attest from being that guy that's casted you and booked you and penciled you into the schedule and has heard countless reads of your work for our clients and have heard nothing but rave reviews from, you know, the staff at Propulsion who work with you, that you definitely practice what you preach, and it's appreciated. And I appreciate you, you know, being on, you know, the podcast and shedding some light on some of this stuff today. And a reminder that today's show was brought to you by George the Tech, and high fives to our show announcer, Mr. Mark Peoples, today's featured voice talent, Sharon Feingold, and to our producer, Christopher Disson, multi-talented Pro Tools aficionado and proof that nepotism is still alive and well. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you next time. Until then, everybody, go get it.